Hey, welcome back to the House of Pod. Cha cha cha. I'm Kaveh.
I'm Lizzie.
Lizzie.
Kaveh.
Can I ask you a question?
Anything you want, darling.
Have you ever seen one of these posters or coffee mugs or t-shirts that has this saying on it? Don't confuse your Google search with my medical degree, or some variation of that. Don't confuse my medical degree with your Google search. Have you seen something like that?
No, but I have a t-shirt that says, trust me, I'm a doctor.
I have one of those too, yeah. But
that's the closest. That's the closest I've been to that.
I've actually never seen one in the wild either. But, you know, it's like a meme or something that pops up on Facebook a little bit more than Twitter, because it's kind of like an older joke, you know. And I saw a conversation go down on Twitter, and I thought it was kind of interesting, and I wanted to bring it to your attention and get your thoughts. So someone posted a picture of a coffee mug that had that on it. And, you know, I've never thought much about it. I never thought it was particularly funny. I thought it was a little snarky, and not in the fun snarky way, like kind of like the boring cliched snarky way. But I never cared much about it. But there were people who saw this post about it and were saying things like, why do doctors hate it when patients try to take an active interest in their own healthcare? And it created a little bit of discussion back and forth about it. And I guess my question for you is, why?
Wait, so they're reading this t-shirt that says, don't confuse medical information with your Google search. And then people are assuming that that means that patients, they're extrapolating and saying that someone is ridiculing patients for advocating for themselves.
Right.
Which I think is like too many steps for them to do.
I think there's a lot going on here. I think the people who have it in their mind, they're like, they're talking about a patient who comes in demanding a specific bit of quackery that they found online as treatment. And they're like, no, that's not true. You don't put coffee enemas up your butt. That's what I think the people who would like that kind of shirt or mug are thinking. But the people who are seeing it and are upset about it are like, hey, patients should be able and should want to take an active role in their own healthcare.
They should put coffee up their ass.
No, right. You're right.
No, okay.
That's not what they're saying. But, I mean, the funny thing is, I see both sides of this. Like, it totally makes sense to me, like, why someone might think that's a funny shirt. It's not really funny.
So,
that's not funny. But right. I see what they're saying. What they're saying is like, you know, what you're seeing online, you can't trust. Because a lot of that stuff is written by people who are trying to sell you something. They're trying to rip you off. There's a lot of bullshit online. You have to learn how to know what's real and what's not. But then I also see what other people are saying by being upset about it to some degree. I don't understand why they're so upset about it. People get so upset about everything. But like, they get upset about like the fact that, rightfully so, it almost seems like people are saying, hey, don't Google your problems. Just come to me. I am the all of knowledge. Which
it's true and unrelated, right? Like the outrage doesn't make any sense. The t-shirt is not funny nor clever. Like it should just say, you know, don't Google, don't use Google as your physician. Like that we can all get on board with. Like doctors are here. I have to say, I think of myself like I'm in the customer service business. Like, even if I think a patient's concern or question is frivolous or ridiculous or, you know, a waste of my time, I always give somebody, or I try to give my patients a sense that I'm hearing them, even if I don't agree, right? And I say, thanks for your email or thanks for reaching out, because I want to encourage people to advocate for themselves 100%. And then my job is also to educate people. So, you know, and listen to them and hear what their questions are about their Google search. You know what I mean? So it's all connected.
Right.
I don't think you can just say you shouldn't advocate for yourselves. You know, I had a patient who emailed me, oh, I got an infusion the other day for a blood transfusion or IV iron or something. And she goes, how do I make sure it doesn't hurt next time? And I, you know, I have no idea the answer to that question, but I said, I'm so sorry. I don't exactly know how to answer this question, but I recommend that you advocate for yourself. And if you've had a technician who's done it really well in the past, ask for that person again. And if you've had a technician who's, or a nurse or whomever is doing it, who did very poorly and hurt you, do not let that person do it again. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that our job is to encourage people to advocate for themselves, because you know, and I know that the patients who fight us the hardest and yell the loudest and threaten the most do get probably an extra level of care. It might be fear-based care, but I am paying much more attention to that person because I'm scared of them. And I'm a human, and I don't know what to say to that. Like, I don't want to respond to threats, but I definitely have a higher level of alertness.
I would argue that people who threaten or scare their doctors or medical providers in some way don't actually receive better care.
They just make it more attention.
They may get more care, but we've proven that necessarily more tests and more procedures and all that stuff are not necessarily better.
Yes. If I said better, I misspoke. I meant more care and more alert and more fear.
I do think you get better care by having a good ability to communicate with your doctor and having a good relationship with your doctor. You just get better. I do think that is true.
So that means ask more questions, right?
And advocate. And I actually like it when patients do some research on their own. All I ask is that then they bring it to me and we talk about it, because a lot of the stuff they are going to get online is not correct. A lot of the stuff people, and we talked about this in our episode with Nina Shapiro, like the internet is not necessarily designed in such a way that for most people who are not super internet savvy can figure it out. It can be really tricky. It can be really hard. And I'm watching YouTube videos. I'm like listening to YouTube music while I'm at work, just in the background. And these commercials pop up every minute. They're like 30-minute long commercials about, do you know the toxins that are in your stool? Do you know what's happening in your colon? Right. And they sound just scientific enough that if you didn't have the background in science that we do, it would make a lot of sense. But we know that it's horseshit. Right. And so, like, all I ask is that they come to me with that stuff. And to be honest with you, they come with great stuff. So great, I'm actually all for it. I'm all for it, as long as they share that with me. And they also have some faith in us too. To be like, well, you know, I mean, I haven't had the situation where someone's been like, well, you say I shouldn't put coffee up my butt, but this person here, quack 5395.03 booty boy, says I should. So I don't know who to trust. You know, luckily I don't think we have that problem so much. But anyways, it's a silly fight to have.
It doesn't need to be a fight. Like, you know, I just don't understand the heated part behind the whole thing. That's why I'm not on Twitter. But that's what everyone should say, like, to your kids. You know, don't believe everything you see. Don't believe everything you read. And that's a fair statement, I think, in life. You know, and it, like you said, Nina Shapiro wrote a great book about primary resources. And we spoke to Tim Caulfield recently about his book, Is Gwyneth Paltrow Wrong About Everything? And I think that those things are, you know, great resources for people to read and review, because you should go to a primary source, whether it's scientific articles or your trusted doctor. I mean, it seems pretty straightforward, but it's a good conversation, a good, nice and friendly debate. But the anger isn't justified. Yeah, but the conversation is totally reasonable.
Right. Yeah. So I agree with that. All right. Yeah. Speaking of very reasonable and well researched, our next guest is really cool. I'm very excited for everyone on our show who hasn't already heard of him to hear about him. His name is Propaganda or Prop. He is an artist, a poet, a rapper, a podcaster, and he's going to talk to us about his new show, Hood Politics, and we'll talk a little bit about vaccine hesitancy and a little bit about America's history that we don't normally hear. So stay tuned, everyone. Thank you again to Nadim for help with production. Thank you to Lizzie. Thank you to everyone on Twitter that's following us. Thank you to everyone who's left a review on iTunes. If you haven't, please do that. We will read it. We really appreciate those. Anyone you want to thank, Lizzie?
No.
And stay tuned. I'm not going to make you do it. Normally, when we have a musician on the show, I have a bit where I make them listen to my music.
Okay. That'd be great, bro.
It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you do it while she's
He drinking. Did it to Sharky Laguna of Creeper Lagoon.
Oh, that was glorious. Ooh, a little Guinness.
Yeah.
It's good for the outtakes.
I know, right? You can play that thing.
I have it tuned, so it sounds like in a sitar. Like it's
got I was gonna say, man, this sound like Fertile Crescent. Like,
do you like that?
Mania right now, bro.
And welcome back. Today we have Jason Emmanuel Petty, rapper, poet, and podcaster, otherwise known as Propaganda or Prop, whose show Hood Politics is now available on iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a real joy to have you on.
Yo, I'm honored, man. It's a real doctor move of you to give my full government name. You know what I'm saying?
I almost gave your birthday. Is that okay?
Please, no address or social security.
Social security, right? Exactly. Well, we know that you're bummed about what's going on in with the Lakers right now, but we tell our audience a little bit about your background, like where are you from and some of your upbringing and you know, your roots.
Yeah, I am from originally, specifically South Central Los Angeles. I moved to what's called the San Gabriel Valley, which we would call SGV, and that's where essentially my formative years were. I'm an LA boy. I've lived all in around LA County. Fell in love with hip hop, you know, because of my age group and location, you know, and it was, you know, it was either this or, you know, join the local set, you know, and like I was. Thought rapping was a little more safer for my life than gangbanging it. But yeah, I fell in love with hip hop. You know, I kind of like traversed the city, you know, doing music and writing my name on the walls and such. And, you know, I went off to college. I got a degree in illustration and intercultural studies. Then I started teaching. So I got my master's in sociology or history and social science. And then I taught high school for a while. That's kind of how I got interested in politics. My father was a Black Panther. So justice and advocacy was just like built into our home. And and then I, you know, poetry and music and all the other things that I do. And I'm right now like just drowning my sorrows in this whiskey because of the Lakers, the defending champions, are about to lose in the first round.
Oh,
as a Warriors fan, I have no idea what that feels like. No. I don't even understand. You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about that background because you really use that in your show Hood Politics to describe, you mean this understanding of local culture, of South Central culture, and you use that really well to describe geopolitics. And I've been listening to your show a lot and I really enjoy it. And like, it's, can you tell us a little bit about the show? I mean, I've heard you use the term politics is essentially gangbanging in nice suits.
Yeah.
But I think that's the start of it. But can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's an onboarding for younger kind of like urban, you know, which is code for brown skin, you know, kids who kind of have this knowledge base, but it's not like, you know, a formalized knowledge base, you know what I'm saying? So I know I definitely struggled in the sense of like knowing that I knew what I was talking about. I just didn't know how to say it the way the Academy wanted me to say it, you know? Right. And it did a number on my confidence. So as I started teaching, I found that like when I went back into like the way that I was translating things for myself and just started doing that out loud for other people, I found that like, you know, this started to resonate. So Hood Politics just kind of came out of that process of learning how to like get my brain around sort of the zeitgeist I was already kind of existing in and learning how to like communicate to. So different from my show is, you know, I'm kind of speaking to, and for street life, for streets, it is super important to like, to make the distinction that like, I never gangbanged. So that like, so when I say hood politics and that is gangbanging, what I'm talking about is the percentage of, is the other 80% of the kids that just grew up here and had to learn how to, had to know how to talk to
gangbangers, right?
You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah, yeah, I had to learn how to talk to y'all and know, right, understand how y'all work, how you navigate, like what's actually happening. You know, one of the greatest things I say when you grew up in the city is to know when it's time to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're just at a party or at something, like one of the best things is like, yeah, it's time for me to head out. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, just
subtle being able politics.
To read those money. Yeah.
Reading the room, subtle politics, reading people, reading situations.
Yes. Yes.
Right. It's so, like, you don't have to have been a gangbanger to understand the culture, like what you're saying, like, because you had, because navigating around it, through it, among it, even if you're not, you know, in it, like, is a part of that, right?
It's a part of it, you know what I'm saying? So there's things that you know just from being so close to it, but then there's other stuff that you know because, like, I have to move through so many different cities, so many different neighborhoods, and I have to make sure that, like, hey, if I have family from this side of town and my best friends from that side of town, and now we're at a party because I'm interested in some girl in this other part of town, I need to make sure to know how to, like, you know, how to work. You don't work through all those situations. Okay. So
you have to switch dialects.
You got to, like, you got to code switch. You know?
So literally, yeah.
So about code switching, because you've been in, you know, you've been parts of South Central that are predominantly African-American. You've been in parts that are like almost all Latino. You've been in academia. You're in the corporate world now, to some degree, at least. You know, you got this great show that's on iHeartRadio. Do you find yourself code switching? Do you find yourself
all the time?
Do you fight it, or do you?
No, the only time it's funny, because it's like, I'm generally like, I see that as my superpower, because even the code switches are, they're authentic, because it's like, I'm not pretending to understand Latino culture. I grew up here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is real. Like, I actually do speak the language. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not pretending. You know, and with academia, I'm like, no, I got the receipts. You need to see my degree. Like, I know what I'm talking about. You know, the only time I ever feel a little twinge of like hesitation is when I come back to my own neighborhood, is when I come back to my own people, because I have this like otherly experience to where it's like, I can surf, I can ride a skateboard. Like, I've had these other experiences where a lot of my homies have not, you know what I'm saying? So you when we were kids, it was like, you sound white, you know what I'm saying? Right. You know, so you have all these, and like, why you talk like the, we would say the Mexicans, you know? Right. Why you talk like the Mexicans, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, well, I mean, that's where I live.
Right.
So
are you worried? You're worried that when you come home, you'll be found, they'll find you unrelatable.
You're not black no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not like, and again, because I had this like world experience, it's like, I wasn't banging the set. Like, I lived here. I'm from here. My family does. My cousin does. My best friends do. But I don't, because I've been exposed to other things. You know what I'm saying? So like, but it's like, you are like, you're still my heroes. Like, you're my heroes. Like, I still crave y'all's affirmation. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Right.
So there's times that like, I find myself like, yo, am I pretending when I come home and basically like speak my own language? Cause the hood is my first language. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's like, I forget that it's my first language. So for me, I'm comfortable because I'm like, this is where I started, you know, but that may not be familiar to everybody talking to you. So a lot of times I feel myself having to like, okay, let me remind y'all, like, yo, it's still 67th to San Pedro. Like, I'm still from here, you know?
Right. Well, everybody, but, you know, code switches to some extent, right? Like,
of course,
you know, white people do. Like, I'm different with my family and my friends and at work and colleagues, but maybe you could distinguish for our listeners, like people of color have to code switch for survival, like, and it's out of necessity, and there's like a stress level that's probably a part of it, and a fear factor and anxiety, and again, like survival. Is that how you would distinguish it too?
Yeah, W.E.B. Du Bois called it a double consciousness that, or a dual consciousness that all Black people have, because you have to learn how to navigate the dominant culture's world while at the same time not losing yourself, you know, and who you are at your core. And it's like, if I'm going to get approved for a loan, if I'm going to get, you know, walk away with my life from this police interaction, if I'm going to, you know what I'm saying, talk to my children, you know, talk to my children's teachers, like all of those things. Like, I'm thinking about how to like change from like, bruh, to like, bro, you know, and just little distinctions like that to make this, like, this white dominant culture feel like they could relax. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a threat to you, you know?
Right.
It's just, you know, me and my wife, like, when, you know, before we bought our house and we were looking to rent, like in different like rental places, like she had to do the phone calls.
Right.
Because when they hear my voice, they're just like, oh, that's a Black man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I did my best to put on my best white voice. You know what I'm saying?
Like, sorry to bother you voice. You're David Cross.
Yeah. Hey, bro. Just wondering if.
Brother. If this, that's the thing.
Hey, brother.
Brother.
Yeah, hey, bro, just wondering if, like, I'd be super stoked if, like, the place was still open, you know?
That's pretty good, actually.
You know, hey, just, dude, no problem, man. Are you guys even busy around 3? Like, maybe I can swing by? That'd be cool. It'd be cool if we swing by this, we'll cruise by. You have to say cruise. Cool cruise, cruise by. Like,
I'm super non-threatening.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you just got to know how to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, we you know, to some degree, we have the tiniest fraction of that because we operate within the medical world and we have to use a very specific language. And then we talk the way we talk amongst our friends. I mean, we never like go as far as like the way Quentin Tarantino sounds around Black people, you know, we try to avoid that kind of cringeworthy thing. But like, but there's a little bit of that in what we have to do in medicine too. Yeah. You know, getting back to the show, you know, I have to say, I really can tell you do the research on it. I know because, like, the first episode of yours that I listened to was the one you did on Iran.
Yeah.
You talked about beef in Iran. Yeah. You talked about the history there. And by the way, your accent on a lot of the names is pretty good, good as mine, which is good as mine, which is probably not that great, to be honest with you. But, like, It's good enough.
Yeah.
But it's clear you do the work. How are you doing the research on this? What's your method? Like, what sources are you using?
Man, I'm super, like, I'm just curious, man. So, like, it's, a lot of times it'll start from, you know, I absorb, like, the nerdiest of history podcasts and, like, long-form things. And then, you know, I have my, like, different channels that'll, like, sort of, like, start the conversation. So I listen to a lot of, like, Al Jazeera English is like a very good source. You know, then you just move around via like NPR, Axios and stuff like that. And then after a while you start realizing that they're pulling from something else, you know? So for me, it's like my teacher antenna, you know, and my social science understanding is like, okay, this isn't new. What's the longer story? So for me, I just start reading, you know what I'm saying? And it's those, like, I'm the guy that like scrolls down to the bottom of an article and like click sources, you know what I'm saying? And then I'll go through that trail to be like, okay, where are y'all pulling this from? Who are the experts on this? Then I'll start looking for their names and like, okay, who wrote along? But then I'll get the audiobook and I'll be outside, you know, raking leaves and I'm listening through, you know, the longer history of this. Then I'll be like, okay, who hates this guy? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, now let me hear what they got to say about this person. You know what I'm saying? So it's my friends tease me about that. They say the same thing. Like, when do you absorb all this? Like, how are you absorbing so much? And it's like, I enjoy it. I know it seems so strange, but like, I really enjoy the longer form you know, historical narrative that got us to the talking point that we're talking about right now, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just something that's so rare these days in this generation of like BuzzFeed top 10 list. If it's not like in like a picture meme format, we have a hard time digesting it. It takes is someone who's willing to read the long form to know some shit. And that makes you like an expert because you're one of the few people willing to go through it and do the work.
It's exhausting, not the process of doing that, but having to trying to have a conversation with somebody that, you know, and y'all doctors, I can't even imagine how many times you've had to like just bite your hand and be like,
well, that brings me to my next question.
Body works.
That brings me to my next question, because something we talk a lot about on the show is vaccine hesitancy. We've been dealing with a lot of patients of all backgrounds, all ethnicities, everything. I mean, we talk a lot about, you hear a lot in the news, at least, about the African-American community, which isn't my major concern when it comes to vaccine hesitancy. It's not them
anymore.
I'm much more worried about like conservatives, like Trumpeteer type people.
But
something that you do talk about in your show is that, you know, beef, so to speak, does not exist in a vacuum. It doesn't come out of nowhere. People say, oh, it's just been there forever. You talk about it like something started it. We talk about conflicts like they're issues that have been there forever. There's nothing you can do about them. Just wipe your hands of the whole thing and walk away. But you talk about how that's not really true. You register really, I think, aptly that these are important issues that start somewhere. It's just a matter of finding at least a place to dive in. So when we talk about the African-American community and their vaccine hesitancy, I mean, we always know about Tuskegee, right?
Yeah.
But there's more than Tuskegee. There's more before and after Tuskegee. Like, where do you feel we need to jump in on that conversation about vaccine hesitancy in the African-American community?
I think, man, it's like, like if I were the head of, you know, the CDC or the World Health Organization, it's like, I feel like I would move away from, like, I would pivot the convo a little bit and just be like, the bottom line is we just don't trust the government. We just don't trust y'all, you know? And no matter who we vote for, you know, I just, you know, both, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you just watched, I just watched President Biden do this whole thing about the 100-year, you know, anniversary of the burning of Black Wall Street, and you ain't say nothing about Black Wall Street. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, it's three survivors in the room. Like, you don't even address them. So I'm just like, man, fam, don't act like we ain't just put you in office, you know? And so there's just this longer history of like, no matter what it is, like, you don't keep your treaties. You don't keep your promises. You don't do what you say you're going to do. So for me, it was like the backing away from it is to just be like, I need to invest in building trust with y'all. Now, granted, with a vaccine thing, it's like, it's not like we got time for that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
And that's the part that, like, you know, kind of bakes my brain in the sense of like, we don't have time to do the long form trust thing. But for me, it was my attitude. I'm like, being transparent, was like, I'm gonna wait till y'all get it. And if you shoot it in your arm, then I'll shoot it in my arm. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna wait. Look, if you were not doing it, I ain't going first, nigga. You're tripping. You know what I'm saying? Right. But if I see you do it, and then just the reality of, like, on a personal note, I'm like, I don't know no one that died of smallpox. I don't know nobody with polio.
You know,
rickets, scurvy. Yeah. Like, I don't know nobody. And I know exactly why none of my friends got scurvy. You know what I'm saying? Right. So.
Well, that's vitamins. That's not vaccine.
Well, okay. My bad. Maybe not scurvy.
It's actually literally corona. Corona and Lyme.
Yeah.
The Lyme part of the corona that gave that prevents scurvy.
Your point's taken. We get the
point taken. My fault. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Can't exaggerate with doctors.
No, no. We'll get called on that. If we don't say something,
I feel you.
I'll get emails. So
I feel you. Actually, you'll get emails.
Actually.
from Karen. Oh, man. Yeah. I can't imagine y'all's emails. But yeah. Oh, no, shit. I, but yeah, like, my, that's been my response is like, you know anybody with smallpox? Neither do I.
Right.
You know? So but yeah, I think it's ultimately it's like it's the long game of like our government has to learn how to build. You have to build trust, and you just don't. We just don't trust you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, I know. But for me, in mine, it was like, well, they put it in their arms. Yeah. You know, so maybe it's there, you know?
Yeah. Well, what would you want to say to listeners or like people of color or white conservatives who are being hesitant? Is there, you know, I agree with you that it's not your job as someone who's been abused and neglected mm-hmm. and disrespected for hundreds of years in this country. It's not your job to do the work. Where's your trusted resource? Is it, you know, who is the trusted resource? I get not getting the understanding of the government. Is it a local doctor? Is it a local clergy person? What would you say?
Me, yeah, for me, it's the homies. Like, you know, I feel like we trust each other more than anybody else, you know? So
there's a pitch for more black doctors right there.
Yeah.
So
go ahead,
sorry.
Yeah. The homies, if you like, nah, that's, you know, my uncle doctor, he got it. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, like we trust the homies, you trust family, you know? And, So yeah, like to have more black people or more like, you know, rallies in the medical field would change a lot of the story here. Yeah. But I do think it's something to be said about the emotional tie. I think just the identity shaping, the emotional tie a person has to a truth, a perceived truth that like, or myth, if you will, like in the sociological perspective, not like right or wrong, but just like, this is just an anchoring narrative, you know what I'm saying? So I think there's a real power in like what I'm asking you to unravel.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, when I think of like the conservative space, I'm like, they've spun such a story in their brain that like where's the thread, like which one of these threads do I pull help this unravel to where you're like, where do I even start, like right. So to me it's like it's this, I have to talk to your emotional identity, like, so it's like, do I say, are you any less a patriot if you take this? Like, who do you feel like you letting down?
Right.
Like what, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you feel like this is a betrayal? Like, are you betraying the squad if you do this? Are you embarrassed? Like, are your friends going to judge you if you do this? Like, there's something else going on here that has to do with their identity to me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like, how do I help you process this? Like the courage, you know, to not be as they would call sheeple. You know what I'm saying? They'll be like, it sound to me like you following the herd.
Yeah.
You know, cause you letting all them make your decisions.
Right.
You know, so like, so to me, it's like, I can't talk to you because clearly the facts don't matter. You know what I'm saying? Clearly history and science and what the hell your eye can see, you know, that don't, like, I just don't understand anybody that would look at a whole ass doctor and think that they know better than them. Like, that's just logic. Like, I'm like, then logic don't matter to you.
Yeah.
You know, you feel me? I don't know what, I can't explain to you mitochondria because you don't know what the fuck the word mean, and it don't matter that I know what it mean because I'm just being uppity by using the term mitochondria. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay, I can't.
No, you're that's really like well put. It's like this emotional component to it.
Yeah,
we're not making decisions on, or most of them, I don't imagine, are making them based on intellectual choices. There's some emotional thing that's driving them. Trying to figure that out and work with that that's the real challenge. I mean, there is a certain group of this country that has not been vaccinated yet, and of that group, there is some percentage that I just don't know how you're going to reach because they have that weird emotional block, and getting through that is layers of stuff to work through.
Yeah.
Levels of like angst that they have to deal with that. I mean, I don't have the time or energy as a doctor to deal with. I don't know who does, man. You know? So I mean, I'm not even sure it's worth bothering with them. I mean, we should, but I always say we got to focus on that one group of people that we can reach, that we can talk to.
I was on a call with, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
Yeah. I was on a call with some dudes from the World Health Organization was trying to do this thing, basically trying to figure out how to reach these two groups of peoples, the white evangelicals and the black community. Like, how do we reach them? And they said that the Ad Council did a ton of research on who's down. And they were like, yeah, 40% of America got their vaccine the first day. It was like, in. And then there was like 20% of America, you ain't gonna never reach them. They are just, their brains have been cooked. They're already anti-vaxxers. You ain't finna talk to them. We fighting for that last 40. Yeah. Like, and trying to get them on board. So what I'm saying is like, what you feel according to them is like, yeah, they've researched this, and you're right. There's a handful of America that's just, we ain't gonna never convince them.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy your latte, you know what I'm saying? And eat your brain bone broth. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Because there's kind mercury of, in our water.
Right. You know?
The brains are cooked, I guess.
Yeah, your brain's like cooked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some people that you can't take, you know, you can't convince. And then there are people that you can, but what we talked about on the show a lot recently is just you have to try and try. Yeah. And try again. If there's any window, if they're just listening, I think that's probably a door that is opened. And I want to go back to something you just mentioned, the Tulsa massacre, which was known as the Tulsa race riots. And, you know, this week is the 100th anniversary of, I shouldn't say anniversary, as if it's something to celebrate. We're honoring the 100th year that it happened. It was 1921. And, you know, you mentioned it and you know, but maybe our listeners don't, you know, that it's when a white mob, mostly many of whom were deputized by like local white Tulsa police, went ahead and murdered, burned down a thriving, economically independent black community that, as you mentioned, is known as Black Wall Street. And honestly, many of us, I can speak for maybe white people, but I learned about it, I think 2 years ago when there was an article about excavating some areas of the town, Greenwood, to find out more information, because it was this dirty little secret in America. Whites wouldn't talk about it, and black people were terrified that if they talked about it, they would get killed. So nobody even talked about it, I think, for the first time until in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I want to know from you as a teacher and as a student, what else about America as far as like dirty secrets, you know, like that people don't talk enough about? What do you think is like kind of the dirtiest little secret, like the history of Black Panthers, the history and origin of policing in America, which you obviously are an expert in as well, pretending that there's no institutional racism and saying things like today is better than it was, let's not talk about the past. Like, what is like the thing that you wish you could write the history book on?
Wow, that's
a big one. There's so many.
Off here, I think it's like I would try to get, you know, up to 30,000 feet with this one and just like, you know, us like the most ghastly thing that I feel like the most unthinkable, right, is that part of you that, you know, that dark corner of your own psyche that you're like, I'm just going to bury that over there and act like it doesn't exist. Like America has it, you know, and it's never went away, you know, so, and it won't until you bring it out of darkness. So like I just think that like the pervasiveness of how systemic racism not only affects black people but, you know, any persons of color, and then I'm gonna say like, I mean, half of white people wasn't white people until the 60s, like, you know,
right?
Didn't nobody think, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, it's affecting you too, you know, and that that like Constitution did only recognized two races until 1960, you know, so you had Japanese people standing in front of the Supreme Court being like, no, I'm white too, so I can own some land, you know, because like, or I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but the point I'm trying to make is like the pervasiveness of how it's baked into the very fat, the very foundation of who we are is something that like, until you're willing to reckon with, it's just going to keep showing up in different places. Any trope, why black people can't swim? Well, we weren't allowed in pools.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why we can't. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. People was born bleach in the pools. And
we saw swimming. The pictures of them bleaching the pools when they
yes, like, there's, yeah, like, there's no part of it. And if little things like, you know, beachfront property wasn't farmable. So we black people used to have to live at the beach because you couldn't farm the land until somebody realized, like, damn, it's kind of beautiful to live at the beach. Y'all got to go. You know what I'm saying? And they kicked us out the beach. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there's no part of society that is not infected by the stain because it's built into the DNA. So until you're willing to recognize that, these moments are going to keep happening. So that's my hope. And it's like, you, like, sweeping it under the rug, it ain't going to go away. It's just going to pile up. And so I'm like, okay, you know, grow some guts and just look at it. We all have to look at our shadows. Like, we all do. Everyone has to look at their shadow at some point. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I just don't understand why you just won't look at it. Like, just look at it. You know? Yeah.
When we first started talking about the subject, we started talking about systemic racism, we thought it was important because we think it really is a public health crisis.
It really is.
Not just talking about like dangers to, you know, black people from like police or, you know, from inadequate healthcare or anything like that, but the concept of minority stress.
Yeah.
This, we had a doctor on, Chase Anderson, great, clinical psychiatrist, child psychiatrist here in San Francisco. And he sort of started introducing us to this concept, this longstanding chronic stress of being a minoritized person in this country is intense. And it bleeds into all this other stuff that we then have to take care of from health risks. So from really from a health perspective, I mean, we used to get some shit about it in the beginning. People would be like, why are you guys talking about non-medical things? But this is medical.
Such very medical.
It's all very medical. Yo, this all comes back to it.
You on to something, man. We learned, I learned in college that like the levels of PTSD from growing up in these environments, and especially because our luxury of our American military is our wars are fought overseas.
Right.
So you never have to see those places again. That's not true. That's not true for persons of color. I have to see the same corner. I have to walk by it every day, you know, so I don't get to get away from the source of my trauma.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that building up into like homies, my own family, people going into therapy being like, yo, you have bipolar disorder. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, you have this you have a chronic ulcer. You have all these like serious like medical issues. And it's just from trauma, you know? And yeah, man, I didn't know there was a term for it, but yeah, that's what we found among ourselves. It's like, man, we dying over this without actually being murdered. You know what I'm saying? So that's super interesting.
Yeah. That's something I think we have just barely scratched the surface of. And to be honest with you, it was a relatively new concept to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and it shouldn't be. It's a little embarrassing to admit it, but true, you know?
That's one good thing. There's terrible things that have happened for a long time, and COVID has helped to expose some of them. And it's like, you know, I hate to make the analogy, but George Floyd being murdered in public, you know, is an important thing for people to go through. It's not a good thing, obviously. If there was a choice, it shouldn't happen. But like, change is happening, even if it's slowly, and even if it's, it seems like smoke right now and bullshit. Yeah. But like, people have felt it. You know, there was a change.
Yeah, the least volume of the zeitgeist that was willing to be like, hey guys, this sucks, right? Like, are we? Pretty sure this sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Like, but yeah,
everyone agrees this is bad, right?
Right.
This is bad. Okay. Like, we're good, right? This is bad.
I don't know it's bad that it was recorded or that it happened, but I know it's bad. No, I'm just
yeah.
Like, yeah. It's terrible. And so, like, there's all these wounds that have been exposed, and it's all been during COVID and the institutional racism and its health effects, I think.
Yeah.
People have been publishing more and talking about more, so and that's good, an important part of the conversation. So hopefully that will change something.
Have y'all been able to like get y'all study booties, but like, have y'all been able to like get your like soul care in during this time?
Get our booties cared for.
You know,
get
your booties
cared for. Nothing like booty care.
We talk about it a lot. We are not the guys dealing with the same sort of level of COVID that like our ER friends have,
and
our hospitalist friends have, and those people out there have been dealing with a lot. But every doctor who works in the hospital like we do has been exposed to it, and it was a weird year. We went through like a lot of ups and downs. We feel, I mean, at this point, I can only speak for myself. It's been a long fucking year, but you know, we see hope now with the vaccine. Yeah. Once the vaccine happened, and that was pretty amazing for us. That changed our perspective on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Even when we didn't have COVID, we were just waiting for it to come. It's like the stress of like waiting for the storm.
It was like, because you remember
it coming and you just don't know when it's going to hit.
Do you remember that scene in Game of Thrones, like the Battle of Winterfell,
when
they're waiting for like the Army of the Dead to show up and Melisandre comes and lights all the swords?
Yeah.
That's how we felt. We were just like, okay, here it comes. It's game time. Go time. Here we go. We're Liz and I both volunteered to work on the wards. We're like, it's going to get fucking ugly.
It's about to get crazy.
You know, we were lucky here in San Francisco. Other parts of the Bay Area, not quite as lucky as us. San Jose, South San Francisco.
They got hit
a lot harder. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. We talked about moral injury, which is like doctor word for burnout. We talked about that a lot before COVID. But now it's a mess, man. We are going to have so many doctors with PTSD. We have so many doctors that are just going to be fucked up on some.
I got a homegirl. She's a doctor out on the West Side. And like every once in a while, I'll check in with her like, yo, how you doing? You getting some breaks? And she was like, I'm cool, minus the night terrors. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She's like, I'm sorry I'm dumping on you. Like, but I'm like, no, that's why I checked in with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, she's like, besides the knife terrors, you know, and I'm like, that's, that's the stuff that like secondhand infuriates me when you see, you know, the dumbass memes, you know what I'm saying, about the other stuff that I'm just like, the homie getting that's a literal doctor, like, shut the fuck up and listen to the actual, I don't understand why this is so hard. Like,
mitochondria, mofos.
Mitochondria.
I'm just gonna scream mitochondria. Oh, damn. That was nice. Look,
that's my favorite word.
That was good.
Sternocleidomastoid? That's a good one.
Sternocleidomastoid.
SCM.
Yeah, it's been frustrating. I mean, there's just been moments where we're just like, Lizzie and I, we started the show, we did it like once a month before COVID. Uh-huh. Then COVID came, we did it like once a week. Now we do it once a week, sometimes even twice. And we do it basically just because, like, one, we wanted to give doctors a place to vent, to talk.
Yeah.
We wanted to, like, communicate with people who are interested in medicine. And we did it for ourselves because we just, like, we needed some therapy, basically. Yeah, so this has been a lot of that for us. But
that's dope, man. I'm glad you guys have something, man. I mean, I checked in, like, once I heard of your show, I checked in a few times. And I was like, dog, these are the type of doctors you want, man. That's like, y'all are humans. And I get it, man. Like, you know, you seeing, you know, so many people a day, like your bedside manner, like I just don't have time, man. It's like, look, man, you gotta stop eating pork, homie. I don't know what to tell you. That's what's wrong with your booty. You gotta stop eating pork. I don't know what to tell you. All right.
You heard it here. Well then,
fuck me then. Don't eat pork. Eat as much pork as you want. See you later.
That's great
it's
advice.
Like you're in the room with us. It's fucking eerie.
Prop says, take care of your booty, everybody.
There it is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, it's been so much fun having you on. It's a pleasure to have you guys, man. Please,
thank you.
Let's talk about things that people can do to find you, support you. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm at Prop Hip Hop. That's the website and all the social medias. It's just Prop hip hop. So there's some poetry there, some books, there's a ton of coffee, and the pod is called Hood Politics. So that's the Hood Politics pod. You can search that out, and yeah,
it's really good. It's like one of my new like routine regular pods that I've worked into my system. So I'm really glad to have it, man.
Thanks. I don't take it lightly, man. Like, you know, one, for my own reputation of like not being well researched, and I always know what you're talking about on either the street stuff or the politics stuff, you know. So like it's weird. It's like when I was doing music, it's like I know I did my 10,000 hours, so it's like it's not gonna leave the studio unless it's heat, you know what I mean? So I'm like, I'm less like self-conscious about that, you know. But like this pod thing, man, like any person that listened to it, like I'm super appreciative, and just know, listeners, like I'm doing my homework to make sure.
Wait, that also reminds me, you're a really good musician.
Oh man, thank you.
We haven't even talked about that, but your rap is really good. The music's good, so people should also listen to that. So where can they find the music? At the same place?
Yeah, prophiphop.com. That's the link to all the Spotify and the Apple, whatever you listen to, you know. You just punch in Propaganda. It's new music out that's going along with the book and the album called Terraform. And it's 4 EPs, right, and a bunch of poetry. Yeah,
all right.
Thank you
so much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you,
man.
Guys, man, this is so fun, dude. Like I legit like y'all. Like, hey, man.
People are always surprised. People are always surprised when
about
they actually
you.
Enjoy their
about
time.
You. They're surprised about you.
I understand.
Oh, you're pretty funny.
I'm all right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
People don't. We're doctors, so people don't expect that much from us. Like, in regards to this sort of like technology.
You sent all of your brain energy into the human body.
We got none. We got none. Into the butthole specifically. We're both GI doctors, so
yes, that's the booty hole.
Into the booty.
Yes. My mother was like the healthy one in the house, but she constantly talked to us about having a healthy colon, a healthy booty, and like good bowel movements. She was like, "How's your bowels?" And I was like, "Mama, like I'm not finna." Okay,
was she a fan of Dr. Oz?
I don't think so.
That's good, because he was like the one who made that real. Which she's smart in that sense, at least. That guy, he's the one who made it real popular for like
really
American moms to care about their poop. Like,
really?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He was the one who came on Oprah back in the day, and he was the one that was like, a good poop should enter the toilet like a Olympic diver into the water.
Somebody said.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good times.
So he's the one who's responsible.
But it's nice that your mom cares about your poop.
She should.
Deeply. She was like, "Are you regular, son?"
Maybe. I think that tells more about her. I think she was probably not regular and really worried about your poop.
Maybe that was it. You know what I'm saying? She was like, "I don't want to go through what I'm going through."
She's constipated. Yeah, that's okay. Some of us wear our emotions in our colon. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I made an assumption, and I'm sorry.
I appreciate it. And I contain multitudes.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employers. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive.